Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here in our sunny L.A. studios. And everybody, boy, oh boy, was I excited about this one. Perhaps more so than any other yet, because I had Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark, a.k.a. My Favorite Murder, in our studios. I am such a fan of their show. I am a murderino to the core myself, and just such a fan of these ladies, and have been for about a year. And a friend of mine introduced me to them, and I dove in really deep. And they're just great. If you haven't listened to My Favorite Murder, you are missing out. And they were kind enough to give up time from their busy schedule, meet me here in Hollywood at the studio, and they even let me pick the movie because this is a My Favorite Murder special. So I said, "What else can we talk about, ladies, aside from Silence of the Lambs?" And I know there's some murderinos out there listening to this show that are super excited about this. And just get ready and hold on to your hats, because we talk about podcasting. We talk about their life growing up and movies and how that figured in. And then we get into Silence of the Lambs, and we all three know the movie so well. So it was really, really fun to talk with them about it. So I don't want to delay it any further. Here we go with Karen and Georgia from My Favorite Murder on The Silence of the Lambs. And I have to say too, Georgia, when you texted me to invite me to the theater in Atlanta to tell a murder story, I have never been more upset that I couldn't do something.
Oh, nice.
You had to go to your in-laws.
I was at my in-laws having like a birthday party for one of my family members. And, you know, you gave me like 2 hours heads up. And I was just
that's
like,
that's how we produce. That's how we do it.
Oh, my God. So whenever you come to Atlanta next I'll just time. Be kind of sitting by the phone, like with no plans whatsoever.
Are we doing That's Atlanta next time?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We will. We'll be back to Georgia.
Oh, okay. What about North Carolina?
Oh, no, wait. Y'all are coming to, I thought you were coming to the Fox this fall.
Then we're, yes, we then are going
totally,
to
and
Georgia.
We're super excited about it.
Did you forget?
We just don't kind of, it's so huge that we kind of ignore it until it's like the day before.
The Fox is like, that's the big theater in Atlanta that I grew up, the big, beautiful old theater.
That's what we did when we were there last time.
Nope.
I was so impressed by you just now. I was like, how the fuck do you know that?
We've done a Fox Theater.
The Fox Theater is
in
what
Oakland?
We're doing in Oakland
Got
this
it.
Time.
There we go.
Yeah. No, you're going to be, see, I know this is exactly how I was hoping this would go. You're being so Georgia right now. No, you're going to be at the Fox this fall in Atlanta. And last time you were at the Cobb Energy Center.
That's what I was going to say.
Outside of Atlanta.
That was a good show.
Yeah.
That was super fun. Was that the one where I almost re-sprained my ankle walking outside?
Yes.
Oh, because we were sitting.
I have trick ankles too, so.
It is so frustrating because it's that kind of thing where when you're trying to travel with people.
Yeah.
And you have a bad ankle. So you're like a little limpy and a little slow anyway.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, like you do something dumb and then you're like, oh, wait, I may have just re-sprained it. Like I may have just recreated this.
You stepped off a curb and there was no curb.
Yes. But I was really mad because it started to go downhill like it was a ramp.
Uh-huh.
So I assumed after 4 steps, I would have been able to step right and we were going to be on the ground.
Yeah. I don't blame you for that. Like there was also like a parking thing that I actually just drove over in a parking garage just now.
Did you?
One of the, what are they called?
Like the stopper thing?
Concrete blocks.
Sure.
Yeah, the bumpers or whatever.
And, yeah.
Yeah, speed brakes.
You know, what every fucking place has that I just drove over.
Yeah. I thought you meant the scary fucking claws
that
at like rental car places.
Yeah, don't back up.
I get scared driving over those going forward because I think, am I going the right way?
You don't trust yourself or the mechanism.
No.
I actually one time was walking out of a parking structure and I was so concerned I was going to step on that claw and have it go through my foot that I wasn't paying attention to the fact that the bar came down on my head.
Oh, my God.
Because I was like looking down like this is bad. And then all of a sudden it was like a thing went gonk and then down my face.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And then I took like one more step and the lady that was in the booth, there are so many signs, don't walk here, no pedestrians.
Yeah.
And I just blazed right up the center. And then she was like, don't walk here. Like just like for insult to injury was
like. So you're
like,
humiliated and hurt.
And then she came in with useless information.
Right.
I was like, thank you. I think I have a concussion. But thanks for the reminder of the thing that I already forgot.
And that's so Karen.
It's so Karen.
Are already being so yourselves.
We didn't even know we were a certain kind of person until this podcast.
Dipshits, it sounds like.
Ding dong.
Well, and with stuff you should know with us too, it's, I'm sure, I mean, I can tell, I can hear it on the show. There's a lot of this like, what the fuck has happened?
Totally.
In right? our lives.
Yeah. Because the whole podcast explosion in and of itself is kind of weird. Because like you're saying, 10 years ago, I don't think I had a podcast, but I would do them every once in a while. And there were people that were trying to start it. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people doing that. Like, remember that? There was that old, it was called Something Radio. And it was like out in Santa Monica. And it was this big warehouse. And there was just like 50 different podcasts going at once. Yeah. They basically, that first wave, I remember watching other people doing it, like Greg Barrett and Dave Anthony doing doing projects, and then just sitting back going like, why are they trying to do radio?
Right.
Like, this is weird. What Everyone's is supposed this? To try to be on TV.
Well, I thought it was like, because I listened to them 10-ish years ago, maybe not that many, but like, I thought it was like NPR style, because it was all like This American Life and you, like smart people shit.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that it was like, you know.
Yeah.
Like just blabber. It wasn't like that. It was
right.
It was smart people.
A little bit more smartish stuff back then, but I think like it's been busted wide open now. And
now there's room for ding dongs like us.
Well, because when they, I think everyone realized you don't need some fancy producer. You don't need a studio necessarily.
Low barrier to entry.
Yeah, you could just get a Zoom and kind of slap it up there, and who cares?
Yeah, let and the then now decide. You're touring. The world.
Yeah, and, the Fox Theater.
Crazy.
All the foxes. Going to every Fox
Any Fox Theater.
All the foxes. And your dress has foxes.
My dress has foxes. Very nice. Oh my God. Gosh, yeah.
How was, now you just got back from, like, didn't you go to like fucking Norway?
And went to Europe and then went to the, and all over. Yeah.
And people are coming out in those weird countries that don't speak English.
Shocked. Yeah, in Oslo, Norway, we had an audience full of, a theater full of people that were laughing in all the right places. Mm-hmm. I think I only told you this once, maybe twice, but I was positive because this has happened to stand-ups that I know. When you go over there, your sets are insanely quiet. Mm-hmm. And even if they like you, they don't respond like Americans respond. Yeah. They're not verbal. It's not the same kind of,
right.
You know. So I know I warned you at least once, but in my mind, I was like, we're going to eat it royally in Scandinavia, and we just have to bear through it, and then we'll get into, like, London, and we'll be okay. And instead of it being, it was exactly the opposite. It was, like, just as good, if not better, than any show we've done anywhere.
Really?
Yeah, Sweden, I think, was the best. Like, they
That's
were.
Great.
But it was a lot of expats, too, so it was a lot of people who were, like, really happy to have a show there that they could.
It's like a unifying element to get the murderinos in one room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we did the UK and Ireland 2 years ago, and no one had prepped me for, because our experience in London was what you were talking about, is they're not very outwardly expressive.
Right.
And I think in Dublin, in fact, I think we played the same theater in Dublin. They were great. But in London, I was just like, holy shit, they're not enjoying this.
Right.
And after they would come up to it and tell us how great it was and what a fun night. And I was like, you guys need to show that.
You're
we're
like,
dying up there.
Yeah. Especially when you're talking about child murders and then no one's laughing, which is like clear, good.
Yeah, sure. We don't expect that.
Right.
We don't
but just the quietness of it all is like, you just start to think you're a terrible person. You're a terrible person.
Yeah. But they're there for a reason.
Right.
It's their interest, but then normally we go into, you know, kind of bad things. We try to avoid child murder at live shows just because it's hard to come back from. But
it's
usually it's
back.
The, exactly like, no, but remember when, but normally our conversation and our kind of banter brings it back up.
Yeah.
And so that was, my worry was like, we were going to go down and never come back up.
Yeah.
And then it would just be like being at a funeral, like a reported funeral where it's just like, that's not the point of any of this. But they get it. I think it's also because these days people hear what other shows sound like and they get almost like what their part is a little bit more.
Yeah. And they're just so delighted to be there in person. Like, you know how it's a very safe stage to walk out on. I'm sure the same for y'all as it is for us. Like we can fuck it up in the middle and I can be like, well, that was the worst joke ever. And Jerry of the future, edit that out. And everyone thinks it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine going and doing stand-up. But I can walk out in front of 1,200 people and it's like, it's great. I'm not even nervous anymore because they're all there to be supportive.
Yeah. That was a hard adjustment for me in the beginning, having done stand-up.
Yeah.
When we were first performing, I got super controlling because I was expecting that they needed this like very like accurate delivery, mm-hmm. jokes, timing, da da da. And
the craft.
Yeah. And like that we needed to, hey, if we do this, then we need to do that. And what I realized is not only is that not necessary, mm-hmm. they want us to be doing exactly what we do in George's
apartment.
That's
all they're looking for is to recreate the experience in their ear holes.
Yeah.
For their best buddies.
Yeah.
Karen and Georgia.
A hang. They just want to hang.
They just want to hang.
Yeah.
Which is a very nice, safe feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Were you like, dude, what are you doing? Stop managing this comedy
no,
show.
No, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Tell me what, like, of course right. I was like, if I don't listen to what Karen's, like, advice, sage uh-huh. advice is, I'm a fucking asshole because she's been doing this. And I, you yeah. know, I don't know what I've done like storytelling shows for 20 fucking people,
uh-huh.
but I've also done live TV. So that was helpful. But I was, Karen would say to me, you do not like, after a couple of shows, she was like, you don't know how lucky you are that you never, that this is what you're starting with.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you didn't have to be broken.
I have not earned, I have not earned mentally and emotionally. Yeah. And I know that. And I'm like the gratitude. I wake up every day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, this is my life. And I'm so grateful.
Totally. It's very, very cool. And also it's just so much more fun. I suffered when I did stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I hated the audience.
I was a fan of your stand-up way back
thank
in the day.
You. Me too.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you.
Karen,
I hated it personally. I was not a fan of it at all, but it is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And so then I almost felt like we have to do this. Like I just got it in my head that we had to do a whole different thing. And I finally realized, I think it was one of those Portland shows that was nuts. And we were, even though it was nuts, there mm-hmm. were people, I think they sold really big cans of beer. Mm-hmm. So everyone got a little trashier than they yeah. probably even thought they would.
That's always fun.
Yeah. yeah. But it ended up, it was that thing where I went, it was like Steve Martin at the end of Parenthood, where I went like, oh, this is good chaos.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is like, this is what we want to be happening.
Like when you're having so much fun on stage that you just forget that you're in front of, it's not because they're not strangers. They're like your friends.
They know you yeah. for sure.
I know. And that's yeah. sort of similar. That's why I identify. It's like it feels like a big family. And the thing that we always get that I know that y'all get is we feel like we know you. We feel like we're friends. And I always say, you know, we kind of feel the same way because it's.
Yeah,
totally.
It's reciprocal. And we're all. We're all in the same head frame.
Yeah,
totally.
Every single person we've met, whether it's like in the meet and greet after or at live shows or in on the street, a person is yeah. like, oh, I would be friends with this person. It's yeah. never anyone exactly. weird. It's always just like good people.
No creeps yet?
Not yet. No.
No. Well, what's weird is it's like a familiar person. So it's yeah. either somebody, it's like, oh, this is my sister
mm-hmm.
or this is this girl I was roommates with in college.
Yep.
It's always like, of the, you know, types that the life casting types,
mm-hmm.
it's like the same four or five different types
and
of people.
And even dudes too, which yeah. like, you know, they don't give them a credit on the show, but like the dudes we meet are like, oh, you're my friend's big brother. I totally know who you are.
It's- yeah.
Yeah. So you have I mean, I know true crime in general has a larger female audience, but like I'm a huge fan and I know there's a lot of guys out there. How does it break down for the shows? Just anecdotally.
90-10?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
There's times at those meet and greets, which is a very small amount of the people that are there. But when like guys come around the corner, we'll be like, boys,
yeah.
like, because it just doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
Or it'll be someone with their boyfriend and then we'll go, we try to get it out of them immediately. Were you dragged here or were you already converted before you came?
Because yeah.
that's the most fascinating
yeah.
person to meet.
Yeah. And it's also fun when sometimes we'll get like, I never heard of you guys and I just came with my friend and like, I can't wait to download this and listen.
Yeah.
And then even if it's 10 people in a theater, you think, all right, well, we've converted 10 more.
I mean, that's the ultimate victory, right? It's
yeah.
like someone who's like, I don't even know what podcasts are.
Yeah.
And then at the end, my thing is, I always tell this to Georgia, if I can see security guards in the room.
Listening?
Like,
laughing.
There's, uh-huh. Because it's such a tenuous, like, true crime comedy.
Yeah.
You can tell there's people who are like, what is this? And I don't like
sure.
this immediately. And there was, I think that was a Texas show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where there was a guy standing right in the front of the stage. And I felt like everything I was doing was like, this is for and about you, sir.
And he was cracking up.
By the end,
I saw it too.
We had
that's
him
so great.
On our side. It was
yeah.
awesome. But I mean, it's, you understand that that's almost part of the job is like, you have to convince people that you aren't, that you, for our thing specifically, that people go like, this is inappropriate or you shouldn't be doing this or that. And it's like, no, no, no. Trust us that we're actually going to do it right. That mm-hmm. we're not assholes and that right. we're not, we don't think people being murdered is funny.
Right.
And there's a complexity to it that we actually can handle if you would just give us the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
And that's a really thrilling thing to actually be able to prove.
Yeah.
You know,
that's great. And what a cool thing for you. Like you've had a long career where I feel like you've always been working in some way or another. And then like at this stage to hit this like point, it's like fucking great.
It's,
you know,
it's pretty magical. It, yeah. really, it is not anything I thought was going to happen. I was like, maybe I'll just get a one level better staff writing job and,
right.
then, and then I'll be happy. But like this thing came in out of left field and it's
I
like,
know.
All right. I don't trust it. I almost don't like it. It's so awesome and perfect.
I still wonder like, when is this going to go away?
Right.
Yeah. Ooh.
Absolutely. I was just talking to my therapist about that today,
yeah.
like 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's hard to trust because it's yeah. big and
I know
crazy.
But that makes you appreciate it more and like try harder and
right.
all that bullshit.
I think you just have to stay like grounded in that gratitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I would be doing this anyway.
Right.
If like I would be doing this with you guys just down the street with no microphone. So the idea that this is somehow
right.
our bread and butter yeah. is
right.
kind of
or we
magical.
Would still be recording the podcast if it wasn't like if it was you know, had
yeah.
the way smaller listeners and wasn't our career now, we'd
right.
still be doing
right.
it.
100%.
It's fucking fun and we love it.
Yeah.
Like I had a podcast for like 4 years that got this, you know, not a lot of downloads, uh-huh. but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a cool medium.
I and, love talking. You know,
and now, right? well, now it makes money. I never made money on it until.
Yeah. That's the new part for
yeah,
podcasting
yeah.
is that it's actually becoming a true business
yeah.
for
yeah.
people.
And a career. And it's that even gets a little scary for me, though, because I'm head of content and development at our network now. So I'm in a lot of the meetings about the industry and it's changing fucking hourly.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah.
And like, I don't even know what it's going to look like in a couple of years. So I'm still a little bit like, should I trust this?
Do you feel protective of the industry, like of the podcasting a little bit? Where it's,
yeah.
I don't want to let all these outsiders who were never interested in it before into it.
Oh, a little bit, but I try to like not be that way because
yeah.
I have like comedian friends who I know look at me like selling out a 1500 seat theater and they're like, fuck that. And like friends of mine.
That's what comics do anyway, though.
I know.
They'll do that if you sell out a 50 seat theater. They'll be like, that fucking asshole. That's the.
No, trust me. And I know I have plenty of friends in the industry like that that think like I didn't earn this at all. But like, what are you going to do? People listened.
Yeah.
And sue me.
Yeah, exactly. That's the beautiful part is it's like the people voted. It's
yeah.
not nobody is related to anybody. It's not any of that kind of usual shit. It's
yeah.
just like, it's not our fault. For some reason,
right.
this is the thing people like. So
I know.
Yeah. Any kind of any of that. I always have that fraud issue and that kind of like
mm-hmm.
Guilt or something. And that's my, I don't know, as I move into my middle age, I'm just like, who gives a fuck?
If, you sort
like,
of have to do that. I
you
think.
Have to.
Yeah.
It just ruins the fun. If
and
you're
don't
worried
become a
about
big
people.
Asshole and think, like, I fucking deserve this.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's,
no one deserves this.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Maybe Malala.
Oh, wait. George, I'm a little disappointed you're not drinking canned rosé.
Oh, do we have any?
But I have a...
in my purse?
She's like, I'll fucking do it.
Our babysitter, my wife and I's babysitter, was telling a story the other day about being like super drunk. And she was like, all I was drinking was this canned rosé. And I had just heard that episode where you were getting like a little thick-tongued.
Oh, no.
And those things are super... loaded up with
what
alcohol.
Are they like 8%?
It's something like really high.
Yeah.
And she was like, I looked at the can and I was like, well, I'm going to have to tell Georgia this. Like, it wasn't just you. It's happening all over
yeah,
the place.
Yeah. Got to be careful. That's why this last episode that came out today, you can hear I didn't open my can of sparkling wine until after my story was done. Because I was like, now I got to sit back
right.
and listen to Karen.
That's your
commentary.
Reward.
Yeah. You did it. Hey, you can have a drink now.
That's great. I know where you grew up, but for the benefit of listeners to Movie Crush, where did you both grow up?
I'm from Northern California. I grew up in a town called Petaluma.
Right.
Wrist wrestling, capital of the world. And it used to be the egg capital of the world.
Mm.
But I think we got knocked out. But they still have the Butter and Eggs Day parade every year.
Nice.
Aww. It's a very egg-based society up there.
It's eggy.
It's real eggy up there.
And you're Southern California.
I was born in LA and then I grew up in fucking Orange County.
Yeah.
But I've been here since for 20 years back in LA.
Right.
Yeah.
How did movies figure into your respective lives growing up?
Raised on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had, in Petaluma, there's a theater downtown that was like kind of one of those old, they played Rocky Horror every Friday night for the longest, it may have been the longest running showing of that. And it was a really cool theater that they, every day they had a double feature that kind of went together. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so it was always like, they would always be like eating Raul and, you know, whatever, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but like they would kind of, they cultivated it a lot. So like, that's the movie where I saw Fame for the first time. And the like title word came on the screen, intensely packed out house started, everybody started screaming. And then all these joints started getting lit up. And I was like, oh, this is what adults do. Uh-huh. I was probably 12 years old.
In Fame?
Fame. It was just like, and that's what they did. That's basically what
at
they
every
did.
Every movie? Or was it just Fame specifically?
Yeah.
I mean, I think those types of like, those types of kind of art, the artier movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. It was a very big deal to me. But my dad used to make us bring popcorn from home.
Oh, no.
We did that a little bit. My mom famously like had a purse the size of like a car.
Yeah.
And we would sneak in everything.
Yeah.
But it's not as good.
No, it sucks shit. And he used to put it in a grocery bag. Oh, God. So he would make like a huge thing, roll it up for you, and then like, here, sneak that in.
So embarrassing.
Yeah, we did the same thing. Like my parents were teachers. We didn't have a ton of money. Just sort of solidly lowish middle class.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of money to take a family of five out.
And this was just like, you're not allowed to have anything.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
You don't ever get that.
I don't eat popcorn in theaters because it's like, well, why would you do? I never did that.
It's such a waste.
Yeah.
Well, it is insanely expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, he was right in a way, but it's like, I don't want popcorn. I want movie theater popcorn. That's
right.
I just want salt
Hot,
in my
buttered,
mouth.
Buttered, salty popcorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll still sneak in like the bottle of water every now and then, and it's just so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? It's just in my DNA to like take a few extra sugar packets.
Yeah.
You know, for the road or napkins.
Yep.
Oh, napkins for sure. Yeah. Those are my car tissues.
Right. I do that too. I owe Starbucks about $500 in napkin fees.
They have good straws too to bring home for your smoothies.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Yeah, they're like, good.
You're just grabbing a handful of straws.
No, maybe, yes, no. Don't worry about it.
Okay, all right. It's private.
What were some of your favorite movies growing up, like in the formative years, or impactful or favorite?
I mean, I remember the night that Siskel and Ebert reviewed 16 Candles. Mm-hmm. We used to always watch that show.
Yeah,
I think it was,
me too.
Was at it the movies? A weekend show?
Yeah, I feel like it was on like Saturday afternoons.
Totally. Yeah, like a syndicated thing.
Oh, I loved it.
I just remember they started it. They started to run the clip and I jumped off the couch. So I was probably like 13 or something and stood next to the TV looking at my mom going, you have to bring me to this. You have to take me. And she was like, okay. And it was just like I had the most visceral reaction to that. John Hughes. Yeah. There was nothing like that. Yeah, it was made for me. But there was also nothing like that in adult kids comedy, like a smart teen thing like that. And so she brought us to it at that theater. And I was on the John Hughes train.
Jake Ryan. I don't know. I mean, forget about it.
He's taken. I mean, really taken.
Even as a dude, he was like, I remember seeing that movie as a teenager and as a guy being like, I want to look like that guy.
Yeah.
And I started wearing preppier clothes and stuff like that, but I had an old Volkswagen and not a Porsche.
He was like almost better looking than Matt Dillon, which is really like my sister would kill me if she heard me say that. But
better looking
he was
than
like,
Matt Dillon?
He was like an updated Matt Dillon for the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was shocking.
Yeah. Matt Dillon, I saw him recently in something I had to watch for this in Rumblefish. Mm-hmm. And he's like one of those guys who's done solid work his whole career.
Yes.
But has always kept such a low pro that you don't think about him much because he's never in the news.
Lester Karen.
Is he like your super guy?
Well, he was my sister's super guy. So I absorbed a lot of that from her. She was my older sister, but like I just rewatched The Outsiders and
such a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Such a good movie. He's you never think about, it's not a kid acting, it's that he is that character.
Totally.
And he does that thing. Remember that scene where he does the thing where they, it just shows them being greasers, where they're like, you know, they come upon some kids playing cards in a field. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, the thing about kids, I just don't like them. And he does this, like, it's very James Dean. It's very overly dramatic, but uh-huh. It is so perfectly done. And then they like basically threaten to kill the kids and chase them all around or whatever. But I just want, like, you are such a better actor as a like 18-year-old or even a 16-year-old mm-hmm. than you ever got credit for. And he had no training. They picked him out wow. of his high school.
Oh, really?
And put him into Over the Edge, that crazy uh-huh. movie about kids, you know, rebelling.
That's right. Yeah, so the kids good. Turn against the town or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically that was, then he just started acting. But I'm sure he went to private classes or whatever. But uh-huh. I mean, he was a star as he was learning about acting.
Wow.
Let's talk, I mean, we can't not talk about Little Darlings.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I didn't find until I was older, because I'm a little younger than you. How do I say this without sounding like a dick?
It's no, too late.
I'm 47.
Okay.
And I know you're not.
I think I'm not.
We can deal with it.
Yeah. Little Darlings, I saw it because I just had this like Tatum O'Neill obsession, because Paper Moon's like one of my favorite yeah. fucking movies. So I was so like, good. I need to watch everything with Tatum O'Neill.
Yeah.
And then I was like, how did I not? I'm glad I didn't watch this as a kid.
Yeah.
That was my first R movie in the theater. My cousin Cheryl snuck us in. And I probably think I was 10. And the part where they're all standing around blowing up condoms with their mouth.
Yeah.
I had the entire audience was going insane laughing. And I was like, balloons are not that funny. Like, why would people laugh at balloons? I just thought that everyone was so stupid.
And I was not allowed to see that because I grew up a little church boy.
Sure.
And reformed church boy now. But I was not allowed to see that. So I still haven't seen that.
Well, the good girl does have sex, and the bad girl doesn't have sex. That's the twist that you do not see coming.
Who's the bad girl?
Christy McNichol.
Oh, well, she was my first crush, which I don't know what that says about me now. But I did the thing, and you probably remember this, where you would send off for like an address to write a piece of fan mail.
Yeah. I did this exact same thing with Christy McNichol. Wait, you tell me.
What?
No, that was it. We probably wrote our letters the same week.
Yes.
And I sent off and got her address somehow.
Yeah.
And wrote her a sort of a love letter.
Aww.
I did too. You know, I loved that show Family that she was on. Uh-huh. And she played Buddy, and she was like the tomboy girl. And I just thought, like, she was the realest. Everybody else that acted on TV. Mm-hmm. Had this veneer of like, I'm sweet. And it was like presentational bad high school acting. And here comes Christy McNichol, and she's just like the fucking being real.
Yeah.
And really like, she has a Jodie Foster feel to her mm-hmm. in that it's like she plays it all small, but it's all very real. And there's like an intensity to it. And I just thought she was amazing. And I wrote her a letter and never got anything back. And then I don't like her anymore.
Yeah.
I cut her out of my heart.
I don't remember when my crush ended for her.
Has it ever?
Probably. She's gay, right?
Oh,
she is. Yeah, I think she is gay.
Well, Jodie Foster, maybe there's something to that.
Maybe. Well, you know what it is? It's like they can bring more to the role than just the standardized, like, I'm cute, I'm pretty, I'm the cheerleader or whatever, where it's like there's also other types of people in the world.
Right.
And then you're like, ooh, other types of people. Yeah. This is interesting. A woman that isn't. Just in a dress, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, the John Hughes movies were so big. Like, I remember seeing Breakfast Club in our 99-cent theater in our town.
Yeah.
And we would just take chances on movies. I didn't really know what it was at the time. Although I had seen 16 Candles, but I think that was before I was like, oh, well, this is the next movie from this director. I wasn't that savvy yet.
Yeah.
None of us knew what that meant.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing back then.
Pre-IMDb days.
Right. Yeah.
Before that was a thing. But those movies were just huge for me growing up.
Yeah, they were so funny.
Yeah.
They were so interesting. It was almost like, for 16 Candles, especially the soundtrack and the clothes those kids wore.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a town in Chicago where everyone's cool.
Uh-huh.
And I want to live in that town. Oh. And like, would I even fit in that town? It stressed me out. I was just like, there was some part where Molly Ringwald has a blue binder, and she wrote, the rave ups was written, is like, you know, like doodles on the binder that mm-hmm. you can see as she's walking. And I completely wrote the rave ups on my binder. I'd never heard the band. I didn't even know if it was a band or what it was, but I was just like, whatever this whole lifestyle is, I want it.
And the notebook doodling and Well, pre-notebook dueling, I guess it was like the Trapper Keeper stuff.
Yeah.
And we were like young.
PGs.
Was that your experience? Or is this all like, no, hey, old people.
She's 10 years behind.
Well, I had older siblings, so I kind of am still there with the, you know, timeline. But then there was this time in high school where I just got really big into the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is my fucking thing. I'm obsessed. And so I got the soundtrack to Breakfast Club on vinyl. And then I also went to Rocky Horror Live. I was just obsessed.
Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah.
So you had a little 80s thing for a while.
Yeah. But, I, you know, growing up in the 80s, I had no supervision. So I watched all the same things. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, you know, nothing was off limits. So, yeah.
I always envied those experience. Kids.
Yeah.
I was sort of monitored. I was the third kid, though, so I got less monitoring as I grew up.
Yeah, us too.
But coming from like a churchy household, like I couldn't see little darlings. And I was embarrassed when I remember like asking my mom, so embarrassing now, but asking my mom to take me out of Greece during the sleepover scene because they were in their underwear. And I leaned over and I was like, Mom, I don't like, I want to go.
This is inappropriate. For because, someone my age.
Well, and I just thought it was embarrassing because my mom was there. And growing up Southern Baptist, I thought like sex and nudity was the dirtiest, most awful thing that you could do.
Yeah.
And I wish I'm still that was unpacking true. That all these years later.
I mean, that's the great gift that a religion gives you that just keeps on giving. Mm. Where you're right. Like, ooh,
Catholic, though, for you.
Yes.
Which is a different thing to unpack.
It is. It's but that sex guilt is so weird. It's just like, what the like feelings that you're having that you have no control over.
I know.
And that you and that every other person on the planet has. Mm-hmm. And you still are like, Jesus is mad that I feel about this right now.
It's fucked up and so damaging.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's biology.
Yeah.
And you're told that you're not feeling like the things you're feeling are wrong.
Yeah.
But that's a different episode. Did you grow up wonderfully atheist in your house?
That's a different podcast altogether. I grew up Jewish, like very, very reformed Jewish.
That's right.
And from with parents, especially my mom, who was like the "where did I come from" thing, like from a very young age.
I love that book.
Yeah, it's the best. So I had to like rein mine back. Like instead of being like, "Ooh, this is scandalous," I had to be like, "No, Georgia, some shit's scandalous." Because my mom would tell us anything.
Oh, right.
And sex was not a big deal.
Right.
So when I got older, I had to realize like sex is a big deal, and I kind of had to put some, you know, right, brains on that.
But the foot wash.
Why is that so weird?
In the Montessori foot washing.
We had a foot washing station.
Because maybe that was your principal's fetish. It was a absolute
fetish. It probably was, right?
Maybe. Someone's that should not have been at that school.
Definitely.
I'll probably pepper in little things for the murderinos because there are quite a few of them that are very excited about this. These worlds colliding.
I know.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah. And it's so nice. Thank you so much because that's so nice to have your own insane inside jokes referenced on another podcast.
Like, oh, now you know that?
I love it. And I mean, I haven't even been listening that long, probably about 8 months. But I went to like pretty quickly and deep and started listening pretty rapidly.
Thank you. And sorry.
Yeah. So many messages.
I was going to try and work in my favorite little rote things that you guys do, but I'll probably just go ahead and tell you instead of doing that inorganically. Obviously, I know that you probably know yours, right?
Mine? Well, see, that's the thing about it is that it's shit that we do on a normal basis that we've done our whole lives, and suddenly people are like, that thing you do unconsciously,
I know.
We love it, and then you get really self-conscious of it.
But it's the best. It's
thank you.
Adorable.
Oh, thanks.
And for yours, what I was going to do is my favorite thing that you do is, oh shit.
No one's ever brought that up before.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, do you not realize that's a Karen thing?
I don't think I do.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I hear it.
My thing is this exact, what I'm about to do right now and what I'm doing right now, where I have to preamble a statement with four other statements that are like, here's the thing, and I need you to know this. It's like I have to stop the room when no one's going to interrupt me.
Oh, it's great.
It's insane.
You and have to set up the scene.
Yeah. When we had Paul Holes on, I did it. There was one thing I tried to ask him, and I did it about six times in a row where I'm like, you sound like a crazy person. You sound like someone who doesn't know what they want to say, but you think you'll just work your way up to it if you keep talking.
Right.
I love it. And I think that's why like our conversations work so well is in my family, like you can start in the middle of a conversation 3 weeks later and the person will be like, yeah. And they're right there with you. Like you just don't finish thoughts. You don't finish sentences.
Right.
In the middle of my conversation with my therapist today, when we were talking about something deep, she goes, take a sip of her water, and it's a water brand that might advertise with us. And I was like, you know, and so I did the, hey, do you like that water? Like, and she didn't miss a beat. We went, then we got right back to it. It was the best.
Oh, that's great.
She does.
She does like it? Okay, good. That's
what's the water?
Well, I'm not going to, they're not paying us to talk about on this fucking podcast.
You're right. You're right.
Damn.
I'll give you a hint, though.
Oh, it's shit.
See?
See?
There it is.
That was fake. That one was fake.
But when you get a guy like Holes in there who doesn't, like, isn't a fan of your show, I assume.
No, he's never listened.
So, yeah, I imagine that's a, you probably do think he thinks we're crazy.
Yeah, and also he's just, what I realized with that and all the feelings around it that we've had to unpack for weeks now.
Sure.
Is that it's a person like I'm pretty sure you don't care about celebrities
per se. No.
But these people that actually do this work that we read article after article about, and they're actually the ones that do the hard, awful work that no one wants to do.
Yeah.
There's a nobility to it. Mm-hmm. And there's like, it's what you actually project onto celebrities is what most people are like, oh, Matt Damon, he's such a great guy. And it's like, we don't really know anything that Damon's doing. But like when you project that onto Paul Holes, you're probably going to be pretty right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because he, even if he's the worst person on the weekend, he spends those other 5 days fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when he was there in front of us, there was just that kind of, he was so good at talking about this thing we're so obsessed with and about the specifics of it and about the real work of it and the real job of it.
It was cool.
It was so amazing.
Yeah. And not getting rich doing it. Like, yeah. Let's be honest.
No, I don't think so.
It is weird to go from this, like, you know, I think probably being in the entertainment industry just to meet someone who has like a purpose and like meaning in their lives is really, and you know, integrity. And it's just nice to meet someone like that. And so you're in awe of them in a way that I'm not with, the, you know, some celebrity famous actor or whatever.
Right.
Well, and you guys nerd out so much on forensic science and people like coroners and people who do autopsies. And so those are the celebrities.
It is. I mean, it's the hardest job. It's just like some awful thing happens that's so awful, everyone like turns away. And there's a team of people that go in at that point and clean up the awfulness. And like, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, we did a crime scene cleanup episode on Stuff You Should Know once. And like really researching the nitty gritty of that shit is just like amazing.
Rough.
Yes.
Because a lot of times they're just civilians, right? That start their own company.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, and they're like, yeah, it's never bothered me and it's pretty good money. And why people make the decisions they make.
I'm good with the stain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a
and
talent.
You're helping people because like in Michelle's book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, she talks about the brother-in-law coming in to like clean up the crime scene. And it's so, they didn't have that before, you know, have crime scene cleanup companies.
Right.
Yeah. So the family had to do it which is horrible.
Yeah.
That's so awful.
Yeah. And that's like every movie ever with the scrub brush and the blood stain on the rug.
We know that doesn't work.
It's a bit of a trope.
Won't come up. But. Yeah, exactly. It's a trope
for harder and harder.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can get into Silence of the Lambs. Here is my first experience with this movie, which is a little crazy. I was a freshman in college and the university had a theater, like the university theater, where they would show movies and then sometimes it would be like a sneak preview of another movie and you could stay. So I went and saw Dancing with Wolves.
Oh my God.
And because I'm in college, I still had nothing to do fucking 4 hours later.
Yep.
And they said, if you want to stay after, we're going to be screening a movie with Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster called Silence of the Lambs.
You had no
nothing. And I was like, all right. And I heard Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs, Jodie Foster. And I thought, this is probably like a Merchant Ivory thing, some period piece. And cut to like an hour later and I'm just fucking like, what am I watching right now?
Yeah.
So I can't imagine like a weirder way to see that movie than to not know anything about it going into it. But it was awesome.
Yeah.
And just like from the very beginning, it's been one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
It has one of the best beginnings.
Yeah.
That it's like, it sets you at a place and it introduces you to a person and it does all these things really clean and really clear.
Mm-hmm. Without words.
Without words. And with her just struggling and like, I mean.
With the, like the Quantico.
Yeah. Her running that course.
And getting checked out by mail.
The big group of guys and she's all by herself and she has to climb that thing.
Getting into the elevator or the teeny tiny little.
Yeah. With all those dudes.
Yeah. And it's just like, so I was also in college. We're pretty much the same age, I think. And I'd read the book and that, in that crazy ghost story that I've told you.
You had already read the book?
I'd already read the book. Because my sister and her friend, my sister's friend, Adrian, read this. And it was Manhunter. Mm-hmm. And then it was Silence of the Lambs. And right. Cause that's after in that series.
I don't know
books,
the order
Thomas
of the
A.
Books.
Harris, but I think it is. I think Manhunter's first, but I read it over the weekend and then had a weird ghost experience in the house that I was living in because I was there by myself.
What was it?
It's really long, but basically, I read this book so much that I kind of started to believe I was Clarice Starling, as I was reading and it was like, this is happening to me. And then that night I went to bed, full house that had, we'd already been having weird things happen, but we weren't acknowledging it to each other. We were just like, oh, I don't know, you know? And then that night I woke up in the middle of the night hearing footsteps out in the dining room. And I was like, I can't believe I'm going to get murdered like this. Like, I just completely was like, this is everything I've always feared. And it's actually happening. Uh-huh. And I heard the footsteps come down the back hallway, walk through, open the one door to the bathroom, walk on linoleum, open the door to my bedroom. And then I heard feet on the carpet in my bedroom. I felt weight on the mattress. I tipped backwards and I was like just frozen solid. And then I felt arms go around my waist and squeeze. And then it was over.
And oh, there was shit.
There was no one there.
Wow.
And it was, 3:30 in the morning. I called my sister. Thank God she lived across town and made her come and get me and stayed with her for the rest of the weekend until everybody came back. It was crazy.
So
but
scary.
I do know that that book set a tone for it was that kind of thing where I couldn't stop reading it. So I started reading it in the morning and then the sun went down and the house got dark around me and I was still reading that book because it's just so like her alone trying to, solve this thing.
Yeah. I read American Psycho in college when I was working the midnight to 8 a.m. shift at a convenience store.
Oh no.
And I don't know how you're supposed to take that book. And years later with the movie, it's like, oh, this is sort of like the darkest comedy, or at least the way Mary Harron directed it.
Tongue in cheek a little.
I guess, because that's what the movie is sort of like. But when I was reading the book, it was scary as shit.
Yeah.
And when you work overnight like that, the fluorescent lights were buzzing. And for that like week, I was in a really, really weird headspace.
Yeah.
So I know like a book can creep in like movies can, but when you're immersed in a book over like hours and days, it can really kind of fuck with your headspace.
Sure. Yeah, because it's like a movie in your head. You're the one that's directing the movie. Actually.
Yeah, you're creating that.
When we went to see, it was the Tower Theater in Sacramento, which is a big old theater, really huge screen. And so when we went to see the movie, I knew it. So I was like, well, whatever. And it was like, we all, when it was over, turned to each other and were like, we're coming back tomorrow night. Like we went so insane and it was the best movie I'd ever seen. Second only, I think, to or up there with The Fugitive, which we also saw in that theater. And I'm sure it was the theater experience as just as much as anything, but I just couldn't believe how I love to look for parts where I go, this is where you fall apart. This is where this starts to suck.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in Silence of the Lambs, you cannot do that.
It's a damn near perfect film.
Yeah.
And there aren't many. What do you remember your first time seeing it?
Well, yeah. Recently I rewatched it after a while and I remember watching it in the theater and so I went to look what year it came out and realized that I was 10 years old when I saw it.
Oh, because you did see it in the theater.
And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with my parents? And I'll tell you what, they were divorced when I was really young. And so my dad had us every other weekend. Uh-huh. And what you did was go, there were three of us and it was, took us to the movie theater, threw us in there, was like, go watch a fucking movie and leave me alone. So my sister and I went and watched Silence of the Lambs. She's like maybe 12 or 13. And I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, no wonder I have insomnia and anxiety. It's just like the most fucked up movie. And I was in love with it. And I didn't, as you were saying too, I didn't understand half of it. Migs, and I was like, what did he throw at her face? I totally didn't
I don't even think I got that when I was in college, because I didn't understand flinging sperm.
No.
I don't think I still do, but
they did that so perfectly, because that could have been a really gross, salacious, and almost like, they did that in exactly the way where you got as upset as you needed to be, but you also, it was not gratuitous.
Like if Eli Roth had directed that scene, you would have seen a full on hard penis.
Yeah, you would have seen
like ejaculate.
No, there would have been no mystery in any way, shape, or form, which is,
Even last night when I watched it, and this is, keeps happening, is I see new things and I understand new things, and I, you know, there's a lot of mumbling in that movie that I didn't understand what they were saying at the time, and I kind of got things a lot. I understood it a little more.
Yeah,
it's just, but I think that's what happens when you watch that at 10 years old. You're not going to
for sure
pick up on a lot of those.
Also, your brain might have gone like, "We need to shut this down now. You can't hear this clearly."
Yeah, but I know I remember watching it many times in my after that. So he must have let us rent it. The fucking rent at the movie theater, or the, what is it called?
This just really did this scar super deep.
Yeah.
What I, this is actually a sidebar, but I just realized when you were 10, I was 21.
Aww.
That's the cutest thing in the world. I've never thought you were a different age than me. I knew it conceptually.
That
but
drives
like,
it home though. Cause,
it's
yeah.
so hilarious.
What if I come up to you at 10? I always think about this because my husband's older than me. Like, what if I'd come up to you at 10 and be like, hey, we're going to have a podcast together one day. You're going to be my best friend and I'm going to tell you everything. You're like, get the fuck away from me.
I would have been like,
I can't wait to see the movie of y'all's story. That's that's
going
to be the most adorable scene ever.
Hey, we're going to be friends. I'd be like, what?
Okay, Trevor.
Do you have any cloves?
No, those burn holes in your lungs.
Yeah.
Wasn't that what they said about cloves? That,
my mom told me there was tiny shards of glass in
that's
cloves.
Right. Yeah.
I love,
because she found them in my pocket when I was in high school. And she did the classic, like, she came upstairs and she was like, I found these in your pocket. I was like, ugh. And she goes, you can smoke them if you want to, but there's tiny shards of glass in them. Anyway, and like left her. I was like,
I remember hearing
fuck.
That too. That's bullshit, of course, right?
It, total bullshit.
Is it? Because I've heard it too.
Why would they put tiny shards of glass in anything?
I don't know.
Just like, please sue us as
I know
soon
why
as
a parent
can.
Would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. It's the gateway drug, cloves.
All right, let's smoke a clove right
cloves
now.
Cloves are the grossest.
So gross.
Like, most, like, I wish I was goth. I can't even get it together to be goth, so I'm going to smoke cloves.
Well, that's why I love.
I remember that taste.
The movie Lady Bird, they do it perfectly where she smokes a clove and goes, lick your lips. And I remember that taste.
Yes.
Right when that happened.
Yeah.
That sweet candy.
Uh-huh.
Before you can get your hands on drugs, when you're just getting your hands on what you can get your hands on, of like, I shouldn't be doing
or like
this.
You get a little bit lightheaded.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. My daughter is almost 3 and she was spinning the other day.
She was smoking a clove the other day.
Smoking a clove. And she was spinning and got dizzy. And I made a joke. I was like, spinning, that's the gateway drug. That's the first one. Because you could see it in her eyes. She was a little drunk and she was like, this feels kind of good.
Yeah.
It's like, that's where it fucking starts.
Keep your eye on that one.
Spinning.
Spinning.
So this movie was the, I think only the 3rd film in history to win the Big Five, which is just amazing. And if you consider this a horror movie, which I don't fully, but it's the first movie of this type to win Best Picture ever, and since. So it won obviously picture, director, actor, actress, and screenplay. Mm. So it wasn't just like, I think in anyone else's hands, it could have been just a little tawdry thriller, but like Demi was such a master, and I was so sad when he passed away.
Yeah.
Cause he was, I think, one of the more underrated filmmakers of his time.
And that whole thing of, you know, he had to really fight to do that thing where talking straight into camera.
Yeah.
They fought him on that. I think from what I saw some documentary, but I can't remember if it was the studio or what the situation or if it was other people on, but that was his vision that kind of a lot of people didn't believe in.
Uh-huh.
And he basically got Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins to believe this was going to be the best way to do it. And I feel like that's everything in that movie is.
It totally is.
They're talking to you. When she walks up, you're walking up.
Uh-huh.
When he says, hello, Clarice, you know, like that moment, it's happening to you.
Yeah. And it's not just the Hannibal character. Like he does that with Scott Glenn and all the sheriff's deputies in the room. Like yeah. he has all those first person shots yeah. where you're Jody, where you're Clarice yeah. for a moment and you feel what it's like.
Yeah, I'll go home now. I love that. That scene where she has to, that's such a, they do so many things. I love that they show she is a beginner mm-hmm. and she has to try out these things. She's not automatically great at everything.
Yeah.
So that whole thing where she has to tell, 11 like mm-hmm. sheriff's deputies?
Oh, right. Go on uh-huh. now.
Go yeah. on. Go on now. Go on now. Her family would thank you if they could. Yeah. That whole speech she has to give where she's
so great.
Never done that before. Yeah. And she has to assert herself, and then afterwards telling him, like, it mattered. Would they look yes. to you? They look to you. It matters.
Those it's like little subtle things. Like the, when I noticed for the first time last night when I watched it that she turns around to put the stuff under her nose for smelling. Like uh-huh. yes. even that as a lady
yeah, she turned
is
her
a
back.
Private moment. And it's like,
it's yeah. embarrassing. And yeah. it's, mm-hmm.
Well, and in that autopsy scene, she just like, I agree, making her a rookie or a student even
yeah.
was just a stroke of genius. Because during the autopsy scene, she gets her shit together so fast.
Yeah.
That, and I've seen it so many times, but different things like stand out. And that one really stood out is this is a scene that was making the men in the room sick. And she turns around and it's right there. And she's like, all right, now it's time for me to do my job.
Yeah. I have to.
A job I don't even have yet.
Yeah. I have to yeah. level up and be in charge.
Yep.
And also it's that thing that is what good mentors do is they make their mentees kind of like do the hardest possible thing mm-hmm. so that they learn. And the way she is talking into that tape recorder, it's she's not being the way the Scott Glenn character would uh-huh. be. You can hear her voice breaking mm-hmm. and she's emotional and she's describing these horrible things, but she's also like trying to keep it under
yeah.
wraps. It's just, and she does, Jodie Foster is such an unsung.
Yeah.
I mean, she's pretty sung, mm-hmm. but I feel like she's levels and levels above what people appreciate her for.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's so natural for her that people don't notice how fucking great she is.
Yeah.
Like she's such
totally
a natural.
Agree. Uh-huh.
Like I put a,
she made it look easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does. And she makes it look real. Mm-hmm. So it's like there isn't a bunch of extra eyebrows or whatever yeah. in emotional moments. I tweeted a joke the other day and it was like, am I really going to eat popcorn again for dinner? And then I put up the gif of her going, yes. And it's that. And but the reason that gif is so perfect is because she has a single tear sitting on her mm-hmm. eyelid, her bottom eyelid right here, that hasn't dropped and probably never dropped.
Yeah.
So it's the end of the actual are the lamb still screaming speech yeah. uh-huh. scene. And she doesn't do anything except for her eyebrows come together a little bit sadly.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. she just goes, yeah.
Yeah.
But she does it like micro. It's such good acting.
You know why? It's because she's fucking holding that tear, she's sucking that tear in.
Yes.
And concentrating only on not showing that tear fall.
Yeah.
That's like the feeling you get watching it.
Right. Because she can't, if she shows that to Hannibal Lecter,
yeah.
like she has to tell him the worst story that he wants the tears.
Uh-huh.
And she has to give him just enough to get to the next step.
Yeah.
But she can't like fall victim or prey to him.
Yeah. God, that dance. Like I didn't realize until the other day the way this is first described. When Scott Glenn says what he wants her to do, he calls it an interesting errand.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, is it a job or something? He's like, it's an interesting errand. I'm like, fucking, are you kidding me? Talk yeah. about underselling something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that first shot of him when the camera's going down that fucking dungeon hallway.
The chair.
And he's just standing there so like erect and still.
Yep.
Just like chilling, like, I got like chicken skin right now.
And you know that was his choice and those were like acting choices of Anthony
Hopkins. Just play it all like
that
cerebrally.
He was going to be very formal uh-huh. and he was going to be very professional with her and he was going to be very kindly.
Yeah.
And then that contrast when he's like and all that shit
yeah.
is like then yeah. the, because he really is, he's a super genius and uh-huh. he is this doctor and
ultimate
he's all these
manipulator.
Things. Yeah. So he's like a genius wouldn't sit there and be like acting like a vampire.
Right.
That would make no sense. Like you yeah. have to hide in plain sight, Dr. Lecter. So like the whole, I think his hands are behind his back, aren't they?
Yeah. He's just sort of standing there. It looks like a statue.
Yeah.
And the only thing moving is his eyes following
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
But that dance that it sets up with those two. It's just, it's like cinema history, like unfolding right there in mm-hmm. front of your eyes.
So good.
It's so great. People will think we're in love. It's like one of the great lines of that movie.
Closer. Closer.
That part.
So great. And before that, you know, they set up with the creep, Dr. Chilton, who is really the villain of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the great movie villains is that guy.
Again, another an unsung character actor, because you don't think for one second that guy isn't real.
Totally.
Oh, no.
Totally.
And he's one of those dudes that he's cast in that movie and he can only be that forever for me.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone in that movie, unfortunately, some of the bitter, more bit
fucking
players.
Ted Levine, poor guy.
I mean, that's who you are.
And he's had a good career, but like it's... He managed to overcome that. I think he did one of the cop shows, right?
He was on Monk.
Oh, okay. I never watched Monk.
He's actually done he's probably done more than Monk. Oh, he was also on, he was on the Alienist. Shows. He was one of the guys on the Alienist.
I haven't seen that yet, but I know your recommendation is what makes me want to watch it.
Who was he on?
And I read the book.
He was I think he had been the retired police captain or something. Oh. He was like, he'd always be driving around in a carriage and pulling up and telling people what to do and not to do.
I gotta go back.
He's got the kind of a big blonde mustache.
Okay.
But that voice, like when I first saw him in Monk, my mom used to love Monk, so it was always be on at our house. But the first time he's like, it's like that voice comes out and you're like, you can't be in Monk.
No.
You have people in your basement.
I know. Yeah.
You know what I didn't pick up on? This is the fucking another thing. That he was the son, right? The son of whoever was living in the house.
Oh.
Yes or no?
Oh, I don't think he was.
Because he goes, she had a son.
The son, I think, was the person in the bathtub.
No, that was her. She had like long hair. She was an old lady in the bathtub.
Oh, did she?
Oh, I don't know.
What was her name?
Mrs. I don't know. I thought he was another guy that could also sew.
I think he was her son.
Hmm.
She had a
son. We have a mystery now because I don't know.
I thought you guys were to answer all these questions for me.
No, I don't know.
I never thought that, but it was only because I'd already, and I don't know if I got that from the book or if I made it up, he worked for her as a tailor.
Well, I think it was her in the bathtub because she had long old lady gray hair.
Oh, okay.
God, that bathtub seems, sorry, that was so out of left field.
No, I don't know the answer to that. And I should because I'm the host. Benjamin Raspel. I'm just going to say that every time I don't know something.
My favorite is anytime I need to use a phone, which is rare because we all have our own phones. But I love to say, may I use your phone?
Did you see a murderino made a fucking cross stitch with that on it?
No.
And posted it today.
May I use your phone?
May I use your phone?
May I use your phone, please?
Then there's another quote from that she made a cross, like a, you know, an embroidery of.
Uh-huh. Oh, I have to see
it's
it.
It's amazing.
I haven't seen it yet.
The gifts
so
you
good.
Guys get.
I know.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Because it's people who like, they like true crime, but they also like arts and crafts.
I know. Yeah.
So
great.
It's very high level.
Well, we heard recently, this is a random aside, but our listeners, the thing they like the podcast, and the thing they like next is books and reading. Mm-hmm. So it's just this perfect thing of smart people who like doing crafty, cool shit and reading.
Anyway. Uh-huh. And having good ideas and being legitimately funny.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Hey, everyone. We took a little potty break. And I think we were talking about what's in the tub?
Mrs.
Because Karen is currently looking it up. We need to get to the bottom of this.
I just clicked on whatever the first website is. So it's definitely.
I'm going to get mad when I hear her name because I'm going to be like.
Miss it. I know.
You know.
On the tip of my tongue.
It's presumably Mrs. Lippman's body. Has been festering in that old tub for the better part of 2 years.
That's right. So all I think he's Mrs. Lippman's son because he.
But
he
his gets name's her. Jamie Gum.
Jame Gum.
Jame Gum.
Which is even creepier.
It's a weird name. No S's.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Jame.
Okay, so who is he to her?
I think he was her employee.
Okay.
Okay, so like, he worked as a.
But then where's her son?
Yeah, this is what it was.
Is it?
Yeah. Remember now.
Yeah.
All right, Doug coming in with the knowledge.
Thank you, Doug. I'm finally not alone. But also that's kind of the fascinating thing is that like he's basically this weird parasite that took over that house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Killed her. And then did he dig that basement?
Was
it already there?
Or did it come with a dungeon? And he's like, well, this is perfect.
I have to kill Mrs. Lippman now.
So one of the more iconic parts. Well, first of all, real quick, I do have a note here. When they first meet, when Lecter and Clarice first meet, it's even creepier when he's smelling, you know, Evian skin cream, and he doesn't smell the perfume she's wearing. He smells the perfume she usually wears, which adds a whole extra layer of like, what?
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
Yes. He's a super taster, for sure.
He is a super taster.
That Dr. Lecter.
Wait, literally.
Literally.
Such a perfect, like, sequence there when they first meet.
Yeah.
And then we get the, well, she goes to the garage with the head in the jar. That's Benjamin Raspail.
That whole, my dream is to just go through that, the real life, that garage.
Oh, yeah, really?
That, minus the head.
There's so many good items, like, totally. Things with fringes on it in the back. You're like, whose house was this?
Yeah.
Like, where is the stuff from?
Have you ever done that? Like, explored an abandoned place like that?
Oh, it's my dream. I go to estate sales a lot, but they're not abandoned. You just break into old ladies' houses a lot, but I don't take anything.
My brother and I used to do that. My dad took pictures of, like, countrysides when we were kids. So he would drag us out to these old abandoned barns and things. And my brother and I would, like, scavenge and run around and, like, check old shit out.
Well, we're from Orange County, where everything is fucking just built up and mapped out.
You didn't have old barns.
We didn't have that, unfortunately.
We had that in Petaluma because we also lived 5 miles out of town. So it was, like, basically every field as you walked down had a chicken coop that was listing to one side because it was so old. And we used to walk through there and there would just be old leftover farm equipment, blades and hooks and shit. Mm-hmm. And we just like walk through and pick stuff up and put it down and walk away, where it's like now somebody should have been taking care of
us. Totally.
It's like dust and bird shit and stuff.
Rusty
we should,
nails.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hannibal kills Miggs in a way.
Right.
Talks him into it.
Yeah. Talks him into swallowing his tongue, which is the first sort of little bit of magic in their relationship in a weird way, because you get the senses of viewer like he's like protecting her.
Yeah, he's punishing Miggs for being ungentlemanly.
Yeah, he has
a nice way to say
he has a moral code. It's just not standard.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is there. There are things he will not accept and things that he, you know, lines that he crosses.
But he respects her from the beginning, I think.
Yes. But well, how hard would it be to go? Yeah. He understands how hard that was for her.
Yeah. But also how manipulative must he be if all he has to do is whisper to the cell next door and get someone to kill themselves? I mean, yes, it's a fucking psychopath, but.
Is that in the book, like what he says?
What he says to Miggs?
Yeah.
Not that I remember.
Okay.
I would say no, but I'm not positive.
All right, because I always wanted to know, like, what is Lecter fucking saying night long?
It's so much better.
He says, swallow your tongue in all these different accents.
It tastes great.
Just try it.
And so at the end of Act 1, of course, it's funny, too, as a writer, like, you can, like, set your clock by it, like, right at that 30-minute mark is when we, like, our story is all set up and he is on board to help her collect and catch Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
Like, from his dungeon cell.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that just sort of sets the whole story in motion. And then immediately smash cut to American Girl by Tom Petty.
The best.
Yeah.
And the best casting.
Yeah,
when in any movie have you seen a girl that looks like Catherine Martin in that way where it's just she is – it's not some starlet. It's a real girl that you went to high school with that you know that's real.
Yeah.
Everything in that movie is just so perfectly done.
And she pops up a lot. And every time I see her, I just think, ugh. American Girl. Don't get in the fucking van.
That's right.
Don't do it.
Get me out of here, you bitch.
Don't help people.
Well, I mean, that's what you guys preach like over and over and over is don't do that.
Don't help the guy. Help no one.
Yeah.
No. Not at night.
I know.
Not with a van.
And that's like prime example.
Not when your cat's hungry upstairs.
I know. And it's so creepy. Like, you know, get in and like just a little further back.
You're
and
not going to be like oh, wait, this is the point where I'm not going to help you anymore. You're not going to do that.
I know.
Once you're in, you're in.
Like, probably had an inkling as she's getting shoved further back.
You can tell she pauses like she does go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. And kind of laughs a little bit.
It's just so, like, chilling and heartbreaking.
It is.
And it is also anyone that follows true crime that saw that movie for the first time is just like, oh, right now we're in a combination, but this is Ted Bundy, like textbook Ted Bundy. This is how he got all of those women to get into
His sailboat thing with his broken arm. And
broken arm.
So it was always helping him do something?
Yes.
And then she'd go with him to the car and be like, well, oh, my sailboat's actually at my house. I thought you knew. Just come with me to my house. That's where I need help. And then she'd get
me. And he was handsome, so...
Yeah.
He was able to charm their way in.
Handsome and, like, I think low key. Uh-huh. You know, like, he was, it's that thing where people think if you're around a psychopath, that you're going to get a vibe of psychopath.
Yeah. Right.
When in fact, that because they're brilliant psychopaths, uh-huh. they're never going to give you that vibe. Mm-hmm. You will never see it coming
yeah.
from a mile away. That's how they do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we were raised not to be rude and say,
sure.
oh, fuck, this guy's giving me weird vibes. I'm going to get the fuck out of here.
I know.
Be like, you know what? Never mind. No, yeah. you don't do that.
That's why you're doing a service. Like, be rude.
Right.
If you have to be.
Right. Yeah.
We did a Stuff You Should Know episode on sociopaths and had people write in, like sociopaths write in and say, please don't share this. I'm a sociopath. And I basically spend my days pretending that I'm not.
Wow.
And I have to fake laugh and I have to fake myself in meetings at work. And I have a family and I've talked to my son about it and like we're open about it. And it's just fucking chilling to read, but also like it's good that they know this yeah. and that they are dealing with it, but it's just
they're
scary.
The majority aren't murderers too.
Yeah.
And,
right?
and wouldn't
different.
Ever.
Sociopathy and psychopathy yeah. are two different things.
Right.
But not there's a fine line.
It's very close.
Yeah.
It's very close. Well, and also I think it's that if you're a sociopath and you don't have – essentially, it's like you don't have empathy. You don't have that connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it you are making a choice to care enough to fake laugh.
Right.
Yes.
That's what's interesting to me is that's, you know, that's the divergence there is
uh-huh.
like who raised you that you know to do that
mm-hmm.
or you want to do that
yeah.
as opposed to wanting to go, I want to do whatever I want.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a woman with a daughter that wrote in who was a sociopath.
Wow.
And it was just really interesting and fascinating and sad.
Yeah.
Like they're born that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Wait. All right. Da, 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 da. So Jodie Foster, Clarice is getting tested through the entire movie. I feel like it's just one giant test after test after test from either Scott Glenn. And I feel like when I first used to watch that movie, I didn't think he was taking care of her enough. But now as an adult, I'm like, he was probably kind of doing the right thing, trying to bring her along to be mm-hmm. a good fed.
I didn't understand until I watched it recently that he wasn't hitting on her. Like, I didn't get mm-hmm. that there wasn't actually sexual undertones.
There weren't, right?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
But I think
we both looked at Karen as the expert. Yeah.
You're both wrong. No. Well, for me, I always felt it was, of course, he couldn't do that. So he's a fed. Uh-huh. He's like the person that can turn off his feelings and he has to for the job and all that.
Yeah.
But I do feel like he picked her because he admired her. He knew her story.
Mm-hmm.
He knows she's this fucking orphan that is a self-made man. And he knows how hard she's trying. He mm-hmm. picked
and
her.
And she challenged him in his class, too.
Yes. And
that's
she,
right.
Yeah.
At the beginning, you learn that.
Yeah, he remembers her.
Uh-huh.
And so he's like, he has to have a woman. There probably uh-huh. aren't that many to choose
right.
from, but he knows the work she's been doing.
Yeah.
I think it's that.
Yeah.
Right. And he sets her up by not telling her at the very beginning, but he was like, you know, I couldn't tell you that.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was right.
Exactly right.
But I think it took me being an adult watching this movie, even though I've seen it like kind of probably every year since
yeah.
I've seen it in 1991. But it kind of finally hit home, like, he's probably doing the right thing as a boss.
Yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. To train her in the right way.
Definitely. Yeah, you don't get trained by, like, what you want it to be.
Right.
It's like you have to go in there and do the job that needs to get done and then learn something. And
yeah.
I mean, I love the way when she first goes to see him, like that whole conversation she has with Barney,
mm-hmm.
where he's like calming her
yeah.
down. Mm-hmm. And the more he tries to calm her down, the crazier it makes me feel. Because
yeah.
it's like, how bad is this going to be that you are being this like, and I'm going to watch you and everything's fine and
uh-huh.
we're fine. But it's like, clearly nothing's fine
yeah.
if you're this like,
yeah.
you have to be this calming. I just think that there's that, it's that like watching a person, which is also a lot like life where
uh-huh.
we're students, but then we actually have to go and like really live it and do something real.
Right.
And it's not going to, who knows what it's really going to be like, but you have to go try.
Yeah. Like the most lame, innocuous version of that is you can take French classes till the cows come home, but until you go live in Paris for a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is a coastal elite talking. That was my reference. You really just got to live in Paris.
Oh my God. You will love the cheeses so much. No, but it's true. You have terrible. To like.
No, but yeah.
You can't well, run sense. Around on Quantico for the rest of your life.
There's no like extra scenes in that movie. And there is the scene where they run the drill and go and, you know, swat into the room and she's dead. Because she doesn't. I don't know. Doesn't look in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not an extra scene. It's there to be like, uh-huh. she's not ready for, you know, that. She still needs training. But uh-huh. for some reason, she's being thrown into this other world.
And that foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. Then yeah. when you right. fuck, when he dips around that corner all weird like a weirdo.
Such a weirdo.
And she's like, stop right there, whatever. Yeah. You know that this is a person mm-hmm. who already, you're dead, starling. Like,
yeah,
this is, she's going to die. You, yeah. That's what you know for a fact. Because if she didn't pass it when it was fake,
yeah. mm-hmm.
how in God's name now? How brilliant.
It's a perfect movie.
It's, yeah, it's a perfect movie.
It really is. There's not a wasted shot. Everything music. Has relevant. Oh, God, that score.
Music's so good.
Yeah.
And every time I hear American Girl, uh-huh. it's the only I thing I think of. And that's a Tom Petty song.
I know.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is. To overcome Tom Petty's Tom Pettiness.
And I feel like there are directors who could have made that night vision goggle scene mm-hmm. Really cheesy.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it could have kind of gone off the rails and turned into like an action movie. Her breathing. Like
oh
I almost had a panic attack when I saw it in the theater for the first time because it's so realistic when she's like.
And her hands yes. shaking and moving yeah. around all
it's
funny.
It's so real.
Yeah. Have so you ever crazy. Worn those night vision goggles?
Mm-mm. No, but I think there's a. I think there's an app.
You can simulate it?
Yeah, you have a night vision camera on your phone.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's frightening.
I know.
It's probably some kind of simulation because the technology is not
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Hopefully no nefarious, nothing nefarious is happening there.
Yeah, but. My brother-in-law's in the Marines, and so he let me play with him one night when I was like 17 and like walk around his neighborhood. It was pretty cool.
Was it crazy?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Could you see tons of shit?
Yeah, you could, I mean, it looks just like the movie. Like it operates on available light, though, so you can't be in pitch darkness. It just amplifies like a candlelight times whatever 1,000. So I guess I don't know if that's a mistake in the movie or not, because I don't think there's some light down there.
There's got to be something.
Yeah, there's a little bit of light. Yeah.
From his weird sewing room.
Oh, right.
Under the door, maybe.
With the Nazi blanket.
That's right.
Swastika blanket.
Oh, that, again.
I never noticed that until yesterday.
Right.
It's so unnerving where you're just like, okay, this is weird. I don't like that he's putting on lipstick and talking in this weird voice. I don't like that. And then you're just, it like passes by a thing where you're like, oh, this is not okay.
He's a Nazi?
Yeah, this isn't.
I didn't notice. Another thing I didn't notice is that he's wearing someone else's scalp when he's in front of the camera.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, and the penis tuck scene?
When he's yeah, doing he's
putting
his,
remember, yeah, when he's putting the eyeshadow on,
uh-huh.
there's a piece of scalp and his hair is full
oh,
and blonde.
Oh, my God.
He's got full blonde
oh,
hair.
Oh, shit, that's right.
And I don't even just think like, I noticed that.
I always just assumed it was a wig.
Nope. It's fuck. There's a piece of fucking scalp. Look
I
it
have
up.
Not noticed that
Look
in
that.
The
I believe
25
no, I didn't
times.
Mean it like that. I'm like, you need to see this.
Wow. That's good. I watched this movie. My wife and I are obsessed with this movie, too. And it was on, like, whatever, 5 or 6 months ago. And I was in the bedroom, and she didn't know it was on. And she was in the kitchen doing something. And that scene was on. And I paused it right at that moment and just sort of left it on the TV. And then she walked in and looked and was just like, oh, Jesus.
How cool would it be like, listen, if someone is at a dive bar with me and puts on that song on the fucking jukebox.
Oh, yeah. That creepy song that he dances to?
They win awards.
I can hear it. What song is that?
Crying over you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's
oh my God.
Is it Gene Loves Jezebel?
Yeah.
It's I think it is. It's of an obscure, yeah. like.
But you can't hear that song and immediately.
No.
Like, sometimes I can hear American Girl and not think of that.
Yeah.
But there's no way you can hear that song without thinking of the penis duck.
No.
Like, one of the creepier scenes ever.
Well, now you know that he's also wearing scalp.
Yeah. Well, I gotta watch it yet again.
And he has the worst voice.
Oh my
like
God.
I'm my apologies to that actor, but it's like his voice is so deep it feels like something's wrong.
Yeah, and like so there's a moth stuck in.
There's something in her throat.
Well, she breaks the case.
That's right.
She's the one that discovers that in the picture.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, which is how we meet up with the nerds.
Which yeah. I didn't. There's more. They were at her graduation.
Yeah.
They're dating.
Well, they're friends. I don't know if they're dating.
They're dating. In the
I think they're friends. Okay. I think they're good friends.
I love
she
it.
She probably is dating Ardelia Mapp, her roommate,
oh,
quicker
shit.
Than she's dating them. But still,
fair.
I love that they're friends. Like she,
I yeah. know.
She's going to build a little life there. And
he was the only person who like, yes, came on to her, but not in a creepy way.
He was cute flirting with
yeah.
her. It was sweet.
Are you flirting with me?
Are you flirting with me, doctor? My friend Amy, I just should say this. My friend Amy O'Neill truly has watched this movie hundreds of times and knows every single word. Uh-huh. And one time she and I were in Wisconsin or something. And I went to see her band, and then we went back to my hotel room, and it came on, and she had to say every line, like especially in the pauses. And she turned to me and she goes, "I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "No, I love this." Yeah. It was hilarious.
It's hard not to. It's so good.
Yeah. And well, he talks, speaking of his voice earlier with the couch scene and everything, but the first time we really get that voice is, you know, it puts the lotion in the basket.
Yeah.
And the way he's saying it is, and the way he's sitting on the edge of the well is just the fucking creepiest thing ever. Talking about it.
Yeah.
Just referring to her as it is just chilling.
And then the screaming at the end when he's mocking her screaming.
Oh,
and putting it that she has tits. Like part of it is, look at this woman screaming.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's so chilling.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
So fucked up.
And is that the part? Oh, yeah, because that's the part where the basket goes back up and she sees the fingernail and the blood.
Right.
Which is like, it's those things. He understood so much that horror isn't like a knife in the eye or whatever. It's like a bloody fingernail sitting on the thing.
Yeah.
Which we had just heard about when they were doing the autopsy.
Yeah, the autopsy.
Like her nails, something is under her nails.
Uh-huh. This is city.
Oh, yeah. Right.
With that fingernail.
well, but also like she's, I get it. That's chilling to see the fingernails because she knows other women have been there. But like she knew it was going to end well anyway, right? I guess that was the straw.
It was the straw.
There's no escape.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
That was when she truly realized.
Other people have not escaped from the same well.
And just she was very sweet to take that dog at the end, too.
I know.
You know?
I loved that.
Unless she went home and like strangled the dog.
The ultimate revenge.
Yeah.
But I do love I love that she was down in that well. There was no escape. There's a bloody finger, and she still made a plan.
Totally.
She didn't fuck around. It was like Catherine Martin was nailed it in that way where just like, I'm still going to do something if I have to be down here and it's this bad.
Yeah.
And then it kind of worked. Like that was a big, you know, it was so good.
Thanks for the scraps, asshole.
So they wind up in the third act. Lecter is in that amazing set that they built, that
so
temporary
cool.
cage, which makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
Just it's so
don't
ridiculous.
Question it.
With so many possible weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like.
I saw that. Have you ever been to the Museum of Moving Image in Queens, New York?
No. Mm-hmm. Is that where it is?
It's great. Well, I went to see a Mad Men exhibit a few years ago there, but they had all the original artistic drawings of that set. For the set designer, and they had the penciling of him, like
splayed
like with angel wings splayed up, which also
so ridiculous
makes no sense whatsoever that he could have gotten him up there, but you just don't even question that kind of shit because it looks amazing.
And I do think it was from the book.
Oh, really? Oh.
From what I remember, I could be wrong, but I feel like that whole thing of we were moving him from here to there, we have to stop here, we have to do a makeshift, you know, SWAT team style cage or whatever. I'm pretty sure.
Which they borrowed from the local zoo, presumably.
You know, a human cage.
Yeah.
You could rent it from.
Let's give him some privacy when he's on the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's only decent.
Humanity.
That whole sequence is great, though. The only thing that kind of took me out of the movie is when Chris Isaac weirdly shows up.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
Oh, my God. That's Chris Isaac.
Yes.
It's Chris Isaac. Inexplicably.
It's Chris Isaac who's like, I'm a huge musician star at the time, but I feel like I want to dip my toe into acting.
Yeah.
Oh, here, I get three lines in this movie.
It's not even a rom-com, which would make sense for Chris Isaac.
Right.
Yeah. He must have been friends with Jonathan Demme.
I assume so, because Demme puts a lot of his old pals like in his movies.
He also looks a lot like what's the our villain who's the leader of the psychiatric hospital.
Oh, Dr. Chilton?
Yeah, I think they look too similar to be together. And like, personally, I saw his face and it's really similar.
Oh, that's true.
Similar to who?
Dr.
Chilton.
Oh, yeah.
There's like fleshy angles and stuff. Is that insulting? Sorry, Chris Isaac, I love you.
Actually, my friend Brent, friend is very generous. A guy that used to drink at the same bar we used to drink at.
best friend.
Who is a really close friend of mine. He was like, there was stand-up comics, there was Groundlings people, and there was Actors Gang people who would all go to this bar, Fellini's, in the 90s.
Fun.
It was very fun. Brent is one of those SWAT team guys.
Oh, no way.
He's the kind of like, he's the one that's like, it's going back down. Like, he's the elevator, looking guy that looks a little bit like you shouldn't be involved in
it. Like the goofy one?
Yes.
The one who walks her up, who takes her up initially?
Yes.
Holy shit.
And so that took me out of it because I was so excited. By the time we got to that point in the movie, I was like, this is the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
And then Brent shows up and I was like, Brent, you get to be in the best movie ever made.
Oh my God. Congratulations. Like a pretty significant part. You know?
And there's Chris Isaac too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird. So I didn't notice until, and I've seen this movie so many times, but Lecter kills fucking 7 people in the first hour that he gets out of that thing.
Oh, shit.
He kills 2 cops, 4 in the ambulance, because they say they found the ambulance. And,
right.
And so whoever's recapping, and they said, and a tourist.
Right.
They just throw that in on the phone.
Yeah.
Because he gets his
7 people in an hour.
Outfit. Yeah.
As soon as he's out with that brilliant plan with the pin clip or whatever.
Yeah. Without a hitch.
Just so creepy.
Slipping that thing into his mouth.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So it just has that shot of the pin and you see him looking at it and you're like, oh, this is not going to end well for anyone. And then the end, that cross-cutting sequence at the end of the movie is so brilliantly played out. I don't know why this didn't win Best Editing. Because it was just such a clever bit of misdirection.
Yeah, you don't see
don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Wait, which part?
Because the SWAT team is going in on the house.
Yes.
And she's like, ding dong.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
And fresh off Frederica Bimmel's house, right? She was like, basically met the friend. The
friend's like, creepy ass Polaroids.
And she thinks that they're a couple states over catching the guy. So it's only seems where he's still out here.
Right.
He's not out here anymore.
Yeah. Right.
They're taking care of it.
Yeah. But she, because she's Clarice Starling, starts to sniff it out.
Right.
And of course, the classic line, is she that great? She's
a great, big, fat, lady.
Fat, fat person.
Person.
Fat person.
Size 14 roomie.
Yeah. And then the other creepy part of that scene is the way he drops those business cards.
Uh-huh.
He just sort of lets them fall away in his hands.
And then he like,
giggling.
He just did it.
He giggles.
He giggles, but he goes sideways like hip first
out
the door.
It's such a specific move.
Not right.
No.
It's like whatever you just did, it looks like you made yourself look like a snake.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're the creepiest human being on the planet.
And then we pass over the sewing stuff and there's a fucking death's head moth.
Yep.
Creeping on over them, and that's her moment of, because this guy's not right. Clearly, there's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, but when she sees that moth, it all comes full circle.
She's already being just normal, quiet, asking questions. Then she's like, Matt, use your phone, please.
Yeah.
She just perfectly does it the way you would do it if you were face-to-face with a fucking serial killer.
Yeah.
Trying to keep a lid on it.
Uh-huh. Use your phone, please.
And you get the feeling, because she's so good, she's probably right as she walks in, like, this feels like a kill house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're getting him in another state, but this feels like a kill house.
Set design is fucking amazing. Like, I feel like in another life I was supposed to be a set designer because I'm always like, the pan of eggs that's like on the fucking stove and just those weird little touches of clearly this is someone else's house that hasn't been lived in or walked in
or cleaned
and it's like it's quiet and still compared to what's going on downstairs.
Uh-huh.
It's just so great,
and he's almost unpeeling his own wrapper because she's just asking regular questions, but then he's like, oh wait a second, there's not a great big fat person.
Yeah.
He's doing things where she's like, wait, why'd you
who would weird say thing that to say.
Yeah, and he keeps asking this the way that
catch that
plays
guy
out.
Yet?
Yeah,
I think he asked.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and because of the misdirection and they're breaking into the wrong house, like, you know, as a viewer, she's all alone.
Yeah.
And that's just such a like a vulnerable feeling as an audience member to know that this rookie student is in front of like the worst serial killer ever.
Yeah.
And she's got no backup.
Yeah.
Like nobody's coming.
Nobody's coming. Also, I think that the going into Frederica Bimmel's room scene is one of my favorite scenes of any movie.
Yeah.
Because she is just trying to collect information. She doesn't know. She doesn't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of goes up and is looking around. And it's this thing of like, it's that thing of like why women should be cops. It's like when you go into another woman's room,
right.
You know where her fucking underpants Polaroids are hidden.
Yeah. Right.
You know where you hid your shit.
You know what's off and what's staged because you would never leave your shit that way.
Exactly.
I never thought about that.
And the, like all of those things that they I think she even follows the cat up. It's like the cat meows from her room. Mm-hmm.
The cat's like, come into this fucking sewing room.
So there are things the in there that it. They did that it's like, it's not all just horror. It's not all just action. It's not, there's just this, there's that kind of how it is, I think, when people work on things and it's like, you don't really know why you turned left and went into that room. Maybe the cat meowed or whatever, but suddenly you're here and, and oh, she has the same jewelry box I had. Why is this edge pull? Uh-huh. And like that moment where she pulls the top out of that jewelry box, it was like, as
like
a
what
girl,
the fuck is, in there?
Is like thrilling. It's like, yes, this is exactly how it would be. This is the realness of it. We all had that jewelry box.
It's very like a Twin Peaksy moment, I think, too. Or I don't know which one came first. Probably Twin Peaks, right?
I don't know.
They are actually kind of right around the same time.
Yeah.
Because it was like early college for me.
Yeah.
Like the secrets that women keep, the secret that girls keep.
That's right.
Yeah, guys, cool. A dude would not have.
No.
He would have walked in that room and like nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Right.
Just like cleared a shelf with his arm and then walked the fuck out.
And also
farted and then left.
Looking around, making sure the dad's still outside. Pushing back the dresses in the closet and the diamond patterns. Was also
seen
like chilling
in
moment.
The autopsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And then we get the great night vision scene where, you know, the creepiest shit ever is when he's reaching out to her and just kind of like fucking with her and she can feel him. Like you can sense after she's told Catherine, like, it's all good.
Yeah. And like, yelling it loud enough.
Come
they're
back
on
here,
their
you
way.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Like, back here, you bitches. Like, that's so real. I'm not like, I'm so glad you're here. It's like,
it is so real.
Fucking save
me. Get
me
out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to sit tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While this, you know, 21-year-old. Who I've never met with a little gun.
And you don't know how crazy he is. She's like, he's a psycho. Don't go after him.
Also the way she was trying to do like form perfect, dipping her head into the well to talk to her.
Yeah. So, shutting all those doors. Like
she's
her training is like kicking in at this point.
But it's the creepiest training room she's ever been in. Like it's beyond horrifying. Yeah, just.
And then every room she goes into, every room she goes into is answers. And it's got to be so exciting to be like, and this is where he's been keeping them. This is, you know, what he's doing with them. This is how he got to this. You know, it's like every room, it's like a escape room.
Yes.
That you have to solve. Uh-huh. And so, you
know.
A
room filled with fucking moths.
Right.
Insane.
And just don't die because now you have the answers.
Yeah. If you just don't die, you can actually get this guy. Yeah.
Right. Or I'm going to be in that fucking well.
Exactly.
With Catherine.
Yeah.
And I think now that we talked about the cat part, now I have that thing where it's like, that is a little bit of the laced through intuition magic thing that got laid in a little bit where it's in the instincts so that when she hears the gun cock, she has that, you know what I mean? She trusts herself because she's already been right.
She's
already proven it right where it's like, however you get to the answer, you got to the answer. So trust yourself that you were right.
And she blows his ass away.
Fuck yeah, she does.
Destroys his whole situation.
Yeah.
The way he dies. What a beautiful death.
His
hands up by his head.
Like,
it's so
creepy.
Perfect.
Yeah. And he doesn't, you know, it's not the trope thing where he comes back to life.
No.
Which was great.
But
that would have been
such a cheap
stunt.
But she still kicks his gun away, which is so cool.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That training kicking in again.
Yeah, because now she's like, oh, I get why you do this.
Yeah.
I get why you shut all the doors. I get it.
And we didn't even talk about the senator scene.
Oh, jeez.
Which is one of the great scenes that... Talk about art direction.
Yeah.
Like building that fucking
hanger
furniture dolly that he was strapped to with
so
that
brilliant.
Mask. It's so iconic.
Have you seen, there's a thing where they test out all the masks.
There was
lots of choices of what kind of hockey mask or like what kind of mask they were going to use. And it's just funny. It's like Anthony Hopkins with the different masks.
Oh my God.
On.
Yeah. Well, what I do love about that scene is that he is in this humiliating, powerless position, and the scene ends with him having all the power despite that. And it's just such a testament to him and his acting and the script. And it's really cool.
And like his, as Dr. Lecter, it's all about his words, the way he uses words, but like he just destroys her.
Yeah. Anthrax Island.
You will be free to walk for 1 hour.
For 1 hour, supervise.
Of course.
And then the great denouement at the end with him. You know, you're rooting for Hannibal to fucking eat Chilton.
Yes.
It's some bit of magic that Demi pulls where you're like, go kill and eat that guy.
Yeah. We know why. We couldn't figure out why he was there. like why Chilton went there.
I think he was just
vacation.
Yeah,
just
getting away for a weird trip.
Okay.
I
think he said something to the guy when he gets off the plane that maybe said like he was there for a conference or something like that, but I didn't catch it.
Like a psychiatrist conference or something.
Yeah. Or which was in Brazil, I guess, or something, or Cuba. I don't even know where that was. It may say, I'm not even sure.
Yeah,
or how Hannibal ends up calling this random phone at graduation.
Yeah.
Oh, the phone in the hallway? Sure, sure. Yeah, that payphone that's right by the graduation every year.
But that's a great moment, though, when he says, you know, the world's more interesting with you in it.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of their relationship. Like, he doesn't want to kill her.
It's a little father-daughtery.
Yeah.
Well, it's like he makes choices about who he kills. So there's almost, you almost respect. He's just not some berserking animal. He's like
gentleman cannibal.
And he won't take credit for killing Hester Moffat.
Right.
Like he doesn't want these the number of kills.
Yeah, that's true.
He's
that's
like,
not
that
why
wasn't
he's doing
me.
It.
I just hid the body. He's not about that.
My favorite of all when I was looking through the GIFs, and there's some great ones. There's one that somebody made where when it's the reveal of when that wall ends and you can see his cell, they put all these like Hot Topic posters behind him. So like right behind him, there's a Hello Kitty poster.
Oh my God.
It's so hilarious. Like every inch of his walls are covered with posters.
Like Slipknot posters.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, people are the best sometimes.
That's great.
The best.
And that's the end of the movie. You know that he's going to, and she says, you know, I can't promise you that. Like, he knows that she's going to come after him. She knows that. But that's like part of that, like the beautiful dance that Demi creates from the beginning.
Yeah.
Just so great.
It is.
All right. We finish with a couple of quick things. What Ebert said.
This movie is a complete disappointment.
I always like to go back and see what Roger Ebert thought.
Nice.
4 stars, of course, for
Hell
this
yeah.
one.
Mm-hmm.
The secret of silence is that it doesn't start with a cannibal. It arrives at him through the eyes and minds of a young woman. The popularity of Jonathan Demme's movie is likely to last as long as there is a market for being scared. amen.
Yeah.
But Silence of the Lambs is not merely a thrill show. It is also about two of the most memorable characters in movie history, Clarice Starling and Hannibal Lecter, and their strange, strained relationship.
Yeah.
And then 5 questions. First movie you remember seeing in the theater?
Back to the Future.
Ooh, good.
Pete's Dragon.
Oh.
I'm so old.
I saw Pete's Dragon.
That was like, I was probably 5, right? Or,
yeah.
I mean, really young Disney.
Yeah, I think I was 5 when Back to the Future came out.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, fuck, my life is, this is it.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a good first one.
First R-rated movie, I think you already said.
Little Darlings,
right?
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't know what year it came out. I want to. We just watched so much shit that I can remember. What's the one with the killer toy? Child's Play.
Oh, the killer
Chucky?
Toy.
Chucky. Yeah.
Yep. That's a terrible movie to see as a child.
Uh huh. Was my favorite.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
This is all explaining a lot.
Literally no supervision. I just want to.
Little Darlings and Child's Play.
Yes.
Will you walk out of a bad movie?
Hell yes.
Yes.
I stormed out of Van Helsing.
Oh, really?
I
was,
because also I saw it at the Vista, and you know sometimes
the best.
The Vista, when they get it right, it's perfect. Mm. But in this, because there was so much gling gling sword fucking play in Van Helsing, it was like
Seizure Town.
It was like my eardrums were like, please get us out of here. And I had told, I was with my boyfriend at the time and my other friend, and I kept going, it's too loud, I can't. And I kept saying it, and they were like, yeah. And I just fucking got up and left and drove home. I was
Good
like, get home on your own. I'm so livid.
Yeah.
Because
at
it was
sword
a,
play.
It was a boring movie anyway. And then it was like, it was physically painful to watch.
Yeah, I never saw that, but my friend Scotty, who's a DP, said he had a 4-word review, Van Helsing, Van Horrible, which we still laugh at today for some reason, because it's just so dumb.
It's right on.
Will you walk out?
I will, but I also am, it's really hard to get me to go see a movie in a theater.
Oh, really?
I really don't enjoy it, partly because of the sound. I have like a really sensitive hearing.
Uh-huh.
I think the only movie I've seen with you is the Mad Max movie recently.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the only movies I've seen in a
really
theater
loud.
In 5. Yeah,
that's
I was in my seat with shit in my ears, but I was enjoying it, so I stayed.
You should get, you know, they make earplugs for bands that...
Oh, they fit you specifically, right?
Well, they fit you, but they also allow in the right sounds. Oh. So it's not just like sticking your fingers in your ears.
Yeah, I should get those.
They're okay. They work all right.
I'm highly sensitive.
We'll get you some of your
such
earplugs,
a dick.
Doll.
Thank you.
Just not about murder, though.
No,
just about
no, I'm fine with that.
All right, number four, I tailor to the guest. So right here I have... Who plays Karen and Georgia in the My Favorite Murder biopic?
Oh, I think it's a Gilmore Girls, right?
That would be pretty good,
that's
actually.
Not, I didn't make that up.
That's about to go, well, Jodie Foster could come back for her.
She could
return.
Play both of us.
Yes. Oh, my God. That she just switches wigs.
Yeah.
And it's straight into camera also.
Stand here. Stand like, here. She moves her body. It's not even.
I guess if they can do that with the fucking Winklevoss twins.
Right?
They can double up Armie Hammer. They can double up Jodie Foster.
Yeah. That's right. It. That's our answer.
I'll take it, Jodie Foster.
I can't think of anybody.
Final answer. And then finally, Movie Going 101, what's your jam at the movies? Where do you sit? What do you get?
Mine is, I love the Arclight. I hope it's not really Scientologist based. Because
is that a theory now?
That's a theory that it's basically a company that's funded by, or Scientology makes money.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But I don't care because normal movie theaters is just the worst people. It's like people go to check their phones these days. Everyone's gotten so ill-mannered in the movie theater. So I love the Arclight.
Because they take it seriously.
They take it. It's cushy. Mm-hmm. Everybody's there to actually do the thing that you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
You know, people don't like talk or fuck around. Always on the aisle, usually.
Oh, really?
If you are facing, if I'm the screen looking up, right-hand side,
wow.
Like halfway up.
Uh-huh.
Right,
but
the
all the
aisle.
Way out to the edge, huh?
Yeah.
Because you need to pee-pee or because you just
I don't
want to get the fuck out of there?
I don't want to get involved. Okay. I don't want. The idea is when you stand and have to walk down that row at the end and you kind of bounce against everything, I just am always like, what if something happens?
Let's just kick over.
You're just like a clean exit.
I whatever. Just want to get out.
Well, like it is funny as I get older, a group of us went and saw Beck in Atlanta recently at this place called the Tabernacle, which has this old church that has three really steep balconies.
Wow.
We're on the very last row. And young Chuck would have just been like, yeah, whatever. Like, these seats are shitty. Old Chuck was like, we're going to die if anything happens in here.
Yep.
If there's a fire, if things start happening.
One of the many reasons I can't go to a movie is I'm like,
yeah, we're
what,
dead.
What would happen right now?
Yeah.
So many bad things.
Yeah.
What do you eat?
Oh, I like, well, if I'm really going to go for it, I'll get popcorn and then put M&Ms into it.
Yes. I was going to say that with
usually plain.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Junior mints and that. Then popcorn is a nice mix too.
You mix Junior mints in?
I'll put them in my hand together because they'll melt otherwise.
Right.
But I was gonna Junior say. Mints and popcorn are good together.
Yeah. That's what Lauren Cook does.
Oh my God. That's one of my friends. And a can of wine that I bring in my purse.
Yeah.
Why don't they have booze in fucking movies? I don't smoke pot, so I can't like get high.
I mean, that's the other reason to go to the Arclight is you just drive up to the roof, get done whatever you choose to get done in your lifestyle.
Is there a bar up there?
No, you fucking smoke pot up there.
Oh, sure.
Is there a bar?
There is a bunch of pot.
Is there a secret bar I wasn't invited
that would
to?
Be incredible.
I don't live here anymore, so I don't know what's going on. They built the Arclight like right before I left.
Oh
yeah.
But they have places in Atlanta that have. Just regular theaters where you can buy beer and wine.
There's
and stuff.
Screenings at the Arclight where you can do that.
Yeah.
Boozy screenings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
but
they make it available.
Drunk people.
It's like for certain shows, they're like, this one, they'll be drinking.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. But I have to pee so much when I drink. So I just couldn't do it because I don't want to miss much.
Wear a diaper.
And that's the perfect way to end this one. Thank you, ladies. This
Thank
was so
you.
Great.
This was awesome. So much fun. Yeah.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I felt like we could have talked for hours about everything. I was actually a little nervous going into this one because I'm such big fans of theirs. And sometimes when you meet people you're a big fan of and they don't live up in real life like you want, it's a big disappointment. So I rolled the dice and I am happy to report that Karen and Georgia are great. They are lovely, lovely human beings and they are funny and warm and generous, and I could not have been more thrilled afterward to know that they're just great, great ladies in real life. So that was wonderful. I just really enjoyed talking with them about Silence of the Lambs, and you can find My Favorite Murder just anywhere. They're touring the world. They are all over the internet, all over iTunes. They're absolutely dominating the podcast industry, which is so wonderful. And you can find Karen at Karen Kilgariff. That is KarenKilgariff on Twitter. Or Georgia, you can follow Georgia at G Hardstark, the letter G, HardStark. And they both have quite the Twitter following and are both hysterical and good Twitter followers. And find them on all the social medias at My Favorite Murder, too. There are all kinds of great fan clubs for the Murderinos, and it's a very active page because they have great, great fans. So hopefully I'll be on stage with them this fall in Atlanta. I'm going to remind them about that offer. And I hope you enjoyed that one. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, remember, never, ever, ever get in that van. Don't do it. Movie Crush is produced, engineered, edited, and soundtracked by Noel Brown and Ramsey Yunt at How Stuff Works Studios, Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.